He needed more time to prepare. Really ought to practice controlling just one Dementor in a cage first. There was only a quarter of corridor now between Harry and the Shadows of Death. The empty winds were so strong that Harry could feel the erosion beginning in the cracks of himself. And the thought came to Harry that maybe he was wrong. Maybe the Dementors did have their own desires and planning capability. Or maybe they were controlled by how everyone thought they worked, not just whoever was closest to them. And in either case, Harry drew up his wand into the starting position for the Patronus charm and spoke.
"One of your number went to Hogwarts and did not return. It no longer exists. That death is dead."
The Dementors halted. A dozen wounds in the world stood motionless while the emptiness screamed around them like a deadly wind to nowhere.
"Turn and go, and do not speak of this to anyone, little shadows, or I will destroy you as well."
Harry's fingers slid into the starting position for the Patronus charm and readied himself to cast it. In his mind, the earth shone among the stars, the day side bright and blue with reflected sunlight, the night side glimmering with the light of human cities. Harry wasn't bluffing, wasn't trying to do anything tricky with his thoughts. The Shadows of Death would move forward and be annihilated, or they would depart. He was equally ready for either. And the voids retreated back as smoothly as they came, the winds of nothingness lessening with each meter they traversed as they slid back down the stairs and departed. Whether they truly had their own pseudo-intelligence, or whether Harry had finally succeeded in expecting them to go, that Harry didn't know. But they were gone. Harry took a moment to sit down beside the unconscious Bellatrix on the stairs, and slumped down as she was slumped, closing his eyes for a moment. Only a moment. He sure as hell wasn't planning to sleep in Azkaban, but he needed to take that moment. The auras would still be going down the stairs, slowly, Harry hoped, so it wouldn't hurt to take just 5 minutes to rest. Harry was careful to keep his thoughts positive, cheerful.
"My, I'll just have some nice regenerative rest here, and then I'll feel better."
Rather than say,
"My, I'll just collapse in emotional and physical exhaustion."
Because the Dementors hadn't yet retreated very far.
"And by the way,"
Harry said to his brain,
"you're fired."
"I found him," cried the old wizard's voice.
"Who?"
thought Amelia as she turned to see Dumbledore's return, carrying in his arms the one sight, the one person she would never have expected to behold, a man in torn red robes, looking scorched like he'd fought a small war, blood dried on many cuts. His eyes were open, and he was chewing on a bar of chocolate held in his one living hand. Barry One Hand was alive. A glad cry went up, her auras lowering their wands, some of them already starting to rush forward.
"Stay on guard,"
bellowed Amelia.
"Check them both for polyjuice. Scan Barry for small animagi or traps. Innovate. Wingardium Leviosa."
There was a pause. Harry sensed though he could not quite see, that the invisible woman was pushing herself to her feet and turning her head to look around.
"I'm alive?"
Harry was sorely tempted to say no, just to see what she made of that. Instead, he hissed,
"Don't ask stupid questions!"
"What happened?"
whispered Bellatrix, and the Dark Lord gave a wild, high-pitched laugh and said,
"I scared the Dementors away, my dear Bella."
There was a pause.
Harry wished he could see Bellatrix's face. Had he said the wrong thing?
After a time, in a quavering voice,
"Could it be, my lord, that in your new form you have begun to care for me?"
"No," said Harry coldly, and turned from her, though he kept his wand on her, and began walking.
"And take care that you do not offend me again, or I will abandon you here, use or no use. Now follow, or be left behind. I have work to do."
Harry strode forward, not listening to the gasping sounds that came from behind him. He knew Bellatrix was following, because the last thing that woman needed, the very last thing she needed to start thinking before the psychiatric healer began trying to deprogram her, was to believe that her Dark Lord could ever love her back. The old wizard smoothed his silver beard contemplatively, looking at where Aura Bari had been carried out of the room by two strong auras.
"Do you understand this, Amelia?"
"No,"
she said simply. She suspected some trap they hadn't yet been able to fathom, which was why Aura Bari was going to be kept outside the main party and guarded.
"Perhaps," the old wizard said at length, "whichever of their number can cast the Patronus charm is more than a simple hostage. Someone who was tricked into this, mayhap. For whatever reason, they have left your aura alive. Let us not be the first to wield deadly curses when we find them."
"I see," said the old witch in sudden realization. "That was their plan. It costs them nothing to obliviate him and leave him alive, and makes us hesitate."
Amelia nodded decisively and said to her people,
"We carry on as before."
The old wizard sighed.
"Any news from the Dementors?"
"If I tell you," Amelia snapped, "will you run off again?"
"It costs you nothing, Amelia,"
the old wizard said quietly,
"and may save one of your own people the fight."
"Costs me nothing except my chance at vengeance."
But that was nothing compared to the other. The annoying old wizard was often right in the end. It was part of what made him so annoying.
"The Dementors have ceased to answer questions about the other person they said they saw,"
Amelia told him,
"and they will not say why nor where."
Dumbledore turned to the blazing silver phoenix on his shoulder, whose light illuminated the whole corridor, and received a silent headshake in reply.
"I cannot detect them either," said Dumbledore.
Then he shrugged.
"I suppose I shall just walk the whole spiral from top to bottom and see if anything turns up, shall I?"
Amelia would have ordered him not to do it, if she thought that would have made the tiniest difference.
"Albus!"
said Amelia, as the old wizard turned to depart.
"Even you can be ambushed!"
"Nonsense, my dear,"
the old wizard said cheerfully as he strode off yet again, waving as though in admonition his 15-inch wand of unidentifiable dark grey wood.
"I'm invincible."
There was a pause.
"He didn't just really say that?"
whispered the newest aura present, a slim, prim young lady by the name of Noelle Curry, to the senior member of her trio, Aura Brooks.
"Did he?"
"He could get away with it,"
Isabel whispered back to her.
"He's Dumbledore. Not even fate takes him seriously anymore."
"And that,"
Amelia said heavily, for the benefit of the younger auras,
"is why we never call him in on anything unless we absolutely must."
Harry lay very still on the hard bench that served as the bed of this cell, a blanket pulled over him, staying as absolutely motionless as he could while he waited for the fear to return. There was a Patronus approaching, and a powerful one. Bellatrix was hidden by a deathly hallow. No easy charm would penetrate that. But Harry didn't know what other art the auras might employ to detect his own self, and dared not reveal his ignorance by asking her. So, Harry lay on a hard bed, in a cell with a locked door, and the mighty metal door locked behind him, in absolute darkness, with a thin blanket pulled over him, hoping that whoever it was wouldn't look in, or wouldn't look too closely if they did. That wasn't a point Harry could affect, really. That part of his fate lay entirely in the hands of the hidden variables. Most of his mind was concentrating on the ongoing transfiguration he was performing. Listening in the silence, Harry heard the quick footsteps approach. They paused outside his door, and then continued onward. Soon the fear returned. Harry didn't allow himself to notice his own relief any more than he allowed himself to notice the fear. He was holding in his mind the form of a Muggle device rather larger than a car battery, and slowly applying that form to the substance of an ice cube, which Harry had frozen using Frigidaero on water from a bottle in his pouch. You weren't supposed to transfigure things to be burned, but between the original substance being water and the bubblehead charm to protect their air supply, Harry hoped that this wouldn't make him or anyone else sick. Now it was just a question of whether there would be enough time before the auras did a detailed check on this cell block for Harry to finish this transfiguration, and the partial transfiguration he would do after that. When the old wizard strode back, empty-handed, even Amelia began to feel a twinge of worry. She and the other two aura teams had worked a third of the way down the three spirals, in synchrony, so as not to allow any gap in their coverage that could be jumped by cutting through a ceiling, and they'd yet to find any sign.
"Might I ask you to report?"
Amelia said, keeping the edge out of her voice.
"First, a simple walk from top to bottom," said the old wizard.
He was frowning, wrinkling his face even more than usual.
"I examined Bellatrix's cell and found a death doll left in her place. This escape was meant to go unremarked, I think. There is something hidden in the corner beneath the scrap of cloth. I left that undisturbed for your auras to examine. On the return trip, I opened each door and looked within the cells. I saw nothing disillusioned, only the prisoners."
They were interrupted by a scream from the red golden phoenix, and all her auras flinched from it. Condemnation was in it, and an urgent demand that almost started Amelia running from the corridor on the spot.
in a rather distressing condition," Dumbledore said quietly. For a moment, the blue eyes were very cold beneath the half-moon glasses. "Will any of you speak to me of the consequences of their actions?"
"I did not," Amelia began.
"I know," said the old wizard. "My apologies, Amelia," he sighed. "Some of the more recent prisoners had scraps of their magic left when I looked upon them, but I sensed no uneaten power. The strongest had only as much magic left as a first-year child. I heard Forks scream in distress many times, but never challenge. It seems you shall have to continue your search. They can hide well enough to escape by mere glance."
When Harry finished his first transfiguration, he sat up, pulled back the blanket that had covered him, cast a quick lumos, glanced at his watch, and was shocked to see that nearly an hour and 30 minutes had passed. How much of that time had gone by since someone had opened the door and then closed it again? Harry hadn't been looking in that direction, of course. That, Harry couldn't guess.
"My lord,"
whispered Bellatrix's voice, soft and very tentative.
"You may speak now,"
Harry said. He told her to remain silent while he worked.
"That was Dumbledore who looked upon us."
Pause.
"Interesting,"
Harry said neutrally. He was glad he had not noticed this at the time. That sounded like a rather close shave. Harry said a word to his pouch and began drawing forth the magical device that he would mate to the product of his hour's labour. Then, when that was drawn forth, another word brought forth a tube of industrial-strength glue. Before using it, Harry cast the bubblehead charm on himself and Bellatrix, and had Bellatrix cast the same charm on the snake so that the glue fumes in the enclosed cell would not harm them. When the glue had begun to set, binding technology to magic, Harry laid it down upon the bed and sat down on the floor, resting his magic and will for a moment before essaying the next transfiguration.
"My lord,"
Bellatrix said hesitantly.
"Yes,"
said the dry voice.
"What is that device you made?"
Harry thought rapidly. It seemed like a good chance to check his plans with her, under the guise of leading questions.
"Consider, my dear Bella," said Harry smoothly, "how difficult it is for a powerful wizard to cut the walls of Azkaban."
There was a pause, and then Bellatrix's voice came slow and puzzled.
"Not difficult at all, my lord."
"Indeed,"
said the dry, high voice of Bella's master.
"Suppose one were to do this and fly through the hole on a broomstick and soar up and away. Rescuing a prisoner from Azkaban would seem easy then, would it not?"
"But, my lord,"
said Bella,
"the Aurors would... they would have their own broomsticks, my lord... fast ones."
Harry listened. It was as he had thought. The Dark Lord replied, again in tones of smoothly Socratic inquiry, as Bellatrix asked a further question, which Harry had not expected. But Harry's own counter-question showed that it should not matter in the end, and in response to Bellatrix's last question, The Dark Lord only smiled and said that it was time for him to resume his work. And then Harry got up from the floor of the cell, went to the far end of the cells, and touched his wand to the hard surface of the wall of Azkaban, the solid metal that separated them from direct exposure to the Dementor's pit. And Harry began a partial transfiguration. This spell would go faster, Harry hoped. It spent hours and hours practicing the unique magic which had made it routine, not much more difficult for him than ordinary transfiguration. The shape he was changing had not all that much total volume. The transfigured shape might be tall and wide and long, but it was very thin. Half a millimetre, Harry had thought, would be enough, considering the perfect smoothness. On the long bench that served as a prison bed, where Harry had set down the transfigured technological device and the mated magic item for the glue to dry, tiny letters in golden script gleamed on the Muggle artifact. Harry hadn't really planned for them to be there, but they'd kept running through the back of his mind, and so seemed to have become part of the transfigured form. There were many different things Harry could have said before using this particular triumph of technological ingenuity. Any number of things that would be, in one sense or another, appropriate. Or, at least, things that Harry could have said, would have said, if Bellatrix had not been there. But there was only one thing to say that Harry would only get the chance to say just this once, and probably never get a better chance to say ever again. Or think, anyway, if he couldn't say it. He hadn't seen the actual movie, but he'd seen a preview, and for some reason the phrase had stuck in his mind. The tiny golden letters upon the Muggle device said,
"All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up!"
Hello, thank you so much for listening so far. We have over 40 hours published already. We release a new chapter twice a week, on Tuesdays and on Fridays. Please do come join us on Discord, there's a link in the description of every episode, where we record this live on Monday evenings, 8 p.m. GMT. If you haven't left a review on Audible yet, please do. They really help with the rankings and help more people listen to this incredible story.
Chapter 58. The Stanford Prison Experiment, Constrained Cognition, Part 8. In darkness absolute, a boy stood holding his wand to the solid metal wall of Azkaban, assaying a magic that only three other people in the world would have believed possible, and that none save he alone could wield. Of course, a powerful wizard could have cut through the wall in seconds, with a gesture and a word. For an average adult, it might have been a matter of a few minutes' work, and afterward they would have been winded. But to accomplish the same end as a first-year Hogwarts student, you had to be efficient. Luck had nothing to do with it. Conscientiously, Harry had practiced transfiguration for an extra hour every day, to the point where he was ahead of even Hermione in that one class. He had practiced partial transfiguration to the point where his thoughts had begun taking the true universe for granted, so that it required only slightly more effort to keep its timeless quantum nature in mind, even as he kept a firm mental separation between the concept of form and the concept of substance. And the problem with that art having become so routine was that Harry could think about other things while he was doing it. Somehow, his thoughts had managed to not go there, to not confront the obvious, until he was faced with the prospect of really actually doing it in just a few minutes. What Harry was about to do was dangerous. Really dangerous. Someone might actually, genuinely get killed. Dangerous. Facing down 12 Dementors without a Patronus charm had been scary, but merely scary. Harry could have cast the Patronus charm, would have cast it as soon as he thought he was in danger of not being able to do so, as soon as he felt his resistance beginning to fail. And even if that hadn't worked, even so, unless the Dementors had been instructed to kiss anyone they found, failure shouldn't have been fatal. This was different. The transfigured Muggle device could explode and kill them. The interface between the technology and the magic could fail in any number of ways and kill them. The auras could get in a lucky shot. It was just, well, seriously dangerous. Harry had caught his mind trying to argue itself into believing that it was safe. And, sure, the whole thing could work, but even leaving out that rationalists weren't ever allowed to argue themselves into things, Harry knew he couldn't possibly have argued himself into estimating less than a 20% possibility of dying.
"Lose!" said Hufflepuff.
"Lose!" said the voice of Professor Quirrell in his mind.
"Lose!"
said his mental model of Hermione and Professor McGonagall and Professor Flitwick and Neville Longbottom and, well, basically everyone Harry knew except for Fred and George, who would have gone for it in a hot second. He should just go find Dumbledore and turn himself in. He should. He really, really should. It was the only sane thing to do at this point. And if it had been only Harry on the mission, only his own life that would be at stake, he would have. He surely would have. The part of him that was almost causing him to lose his concentration on the partial transfiguration he was performing, the part that was threatening to open him up to the Dementors, was Professor Quirrell, still unconscious, still a snake. If Professor Quirrell went to Azkaban for his part in the escape, he would die. He probably wouldn't last even a week. He was that sensitive. It was that simple. If Harry lost here, he lost Professor Quirrell.
"Even though he's probably evil,"
said the Hufflepuff part of him quietly.
"Even so?"
It wasn't a decision that Harry made in any conscious way. He just couldn't do it. Losing was for house points, not people.
"If you think your own life is valuable enough that you're not willing to take on an 80% probability of dying in order to protect all the prisoners in Azkaban,"
his Slytherin side observed,
"there's no way you can justify taking a 20% risk to your life to save Bellatrix and Professor Quirrell. The math doesn't add up. You can't be assigning consistent utilities over outcomes here."
The logical side of him noted that Slytherin had just won the argument. Harry kept the form in his mind, kept on casting the spell. He could always just abort the mission when he was done with the transfiguration. He didn't want to lose the effort he had already invested. And then Harry thought of something else that suddenly made it very hard to keep the magic going, very hard to keep up his resistance to the Dementors.
"What if the portkey doesn't take us where Professor Quirrell said it did?"
It was obvious in retrospect, the moment he thought about it. Even if the planned escape went completely right, even if the Muggle device worked and didn't explode and didn't interact badly with the mated magic item, even if the auras didn't get in a lucky shot, even if Harry made it far enough away from Azkaban to use the portkey, there might not be a psychiatric healer at the end of it. That was something Harry had believed when he'd trusted Professor Quirrell, and he'd forgotten to re-evaluate it after Professor Quirrell was no longer to be trusted.
"You can't do this," said Hufflepuff. "At this point, we're talking mere stupidity."
Cold seemed to spread through the room, but Harry kept the transfiguration going, even as his resistance against the Dementors faltered.
"I can't lose Professor Quirrell. He tried to kill a police officer," said Hufflepuff. "You already lost him in that moment. Bellatrix is probably just what everyone thinks she is. Just take your cloak back, go find Dumbledore, and tell him you were tricked." "No," thought Harry desperately. "Not without talking to Professor Quirrell. There might be an explanation. I don't know. Maybe he was standing far enough away from my Patronus that the Dementors got to him. I don't understand. It doesn't make sense on any hypothesis. Why would he do that? I can't just..."
Harry turned his mind away from that chain of thought before it completely broke his resistance to the fear, because he couldn't think of feeding Professor Quirrell to Dementors whilst staying resolved against death. It was a cognitive impossibility.
"Your reasoning is artificially impaired," observed the logical part of him calmly. "Find a way to unimpair it." "All right, let's just generate alternatives," Harry thought. "Not choose, not weigh, certainly not commit. Just think about what else I might be able to do besides the original plan."
Harry went on cutting the hole in the wall. He was using partial transfiguration on a thin cylindrical shell of metal, 2 meters in diameter and 0.5 millimeter thick, running all the way through the wall. He was transfiguring that 0.5 millimeter thickness of metal into motor oil. Motor oil was a liquid, and you weren't to transfigure liquids because they might evaporate, but he and Bellatrix and the snake all had bubblehead charms, and Harry would cast Finite on the oil immediately after, dispelling his own transfiguration. As soon as the separated and lubricated hunk of metal slid out of the wall and onto the floor of their cell, he'd slanted it so gravity would pull it in once the transfiguration was done. If Harry and Bellatrix didn't exit on his broomstick through the resulting hole in the wall, Harry's brain suggested that he could try to transfigure a surface cover over the hole in the wall, leaving a space for Bellatrix and Professor Quirrell to hide in, wearing the cloak, while Harry turned himself in, and Professor Quirrell would eventually wake up and he and Bellatrix could try to figure out how to escape Azkaban on their own. It was, first of all, a dumb idea, and second, there would still be a huge hunk of metal on the floor of the cell which would give it away. And then Harry's brain saw the obvious.
"Let Bellatrix and Professor Quirrell use the escape route you invented. You stay behind and turn yourself in."
Bellatrix and Professor Quirrell were the ones whose lives were at stake. They were gaining, not losing, from taking the risk. And there was no reason. No sane reason at all for Harry to go with them. A calm came over Harry as he thought it. The cold and darkness that had been wavering around the fringes of his mind retreated. Yes, that was it. That was the creative, outside-the-box route. That was the hidden third alternative. The falseness of the dilemma was obvious in retrospect. If Harry turned himself in, he didn't have to turn in Bellatrix and Professor Quirrell. If Bellatrix and Professor Quirrell took a dangerous escape route, Harry didn't need to go with them. Harry didn't even need to face the embarrassment of admitting he had been tricked, if he ordered Bellatrix to remove the memory. Everyone would just assume he'd been kidnapped, including Harry himself. Admittedly, there was no plausible reason why the Dark Lord would ever ask Bellatrix to do that, but Harry could simply smile and tell Bellatrix she wasn't allowed to know. And that would be that. Her aura team had gotten around 3/4 of the way down Azkaban, as had the other two teams on the other two spirals. Amelia was feeling tenser already, though she was betting on the criminals hiding on the second to lowest floor. Part of her wished Dumbledore had thought to check that specific floor more carefully, and part of her was glad he hadn't. And then there was a distant sound, like a tiny tink noise coming from far away. Like a very loud sound, coming from the second to lowest floor, say. Amelia looked at Dumbledore before she realized, before she managed to stop herself. The old wizard shrugged, gave her a small smile, said,
"Since you asked it, Amelia,"
and went off again.
"Finite incantatum,"
Harry said to the oil coating the giant chunk of metal on the floor. He hardly heard himself speak. His ears were still ringing from the gigantic thud of the solid metal sliding out of the wall and falling. He should have put up a quieting charm in retrospect, though that wouldn't have stopped the noise from spreading through the solid metal floor. And then Harry said it again.
"Finite incantatum,"
to the oil coating the 2-meter hole in the wall, spreading the effect wider. It was his own magic Harry was cancelling, which made the spell almost effortless. Harry was feeling a bit tired now, but that was the last use of magic he would need. He hadn't even needed to do it, really, but Harry didn't want to leave transfigured liquid lying around, and he didn't want to reveal the secret of partial transfiguration either. It seemed very inviting, that 2-meter hole leading to freedom. The light from outside coming in wasn't exactly the sun shining on his face, but it was brighter than anything of Azkaban's interior. Harry was tempted to just go with, just hop on the broomstick with Bellatrix and the snake. Chances were that they would get out safely. And if they did get out safely, and Harry came with, then he and Professor Quirrell could go back in time and look perfectly innocent. Everything would go back to normal. If Harry stayed behind and turned himself in, then, even if everyone assumed Harry had been a hostage, assumed Harry had lied to Professor McGonagall's Patronus at one point, even if Harry himself got off lightly, well, it wasn't likely that the defense professor would go on teaching at Hogwarts. Professor Quirrell would have reached the predestined end of his career in February of the school year. And yes, Professor McGonagall would kill Harry. And yes, it would be slow and painful. But staying behind was the sensible, safe, sane thing to do. And Harry was feeling more relaxed than regretful. Harry turned to Bellatrix. He opened his mouth to instruct her a final time. And there was a hiss. A weak hiss. A hiss that sounded slow and confused. And the hiss said,
"What was that noise?"
Through the corridor, the old wizard strode. He came to a metal door and opened it, already knowing from memory that the cells within were empty. 7 mighty and discerning incantations the wizard spoke then, before he moved on. It would be little enough exertion in total, with so few cells left to check.
teacher!
Harry hissed. So many emotions bubbling up in him all at once. He knew, though he could not see, that the green snake around Bellatrix's shoulders was slowly lifting its head to look around.
Are you all right, teacher?
Teacher?
Came the weak, confused hiss.
Where is this?
Prison!
Harry hissed.
The prison with life-eaters! We were to rescue a woman, you and I. You tried to slay the Protector Man. I blocked your killing curse. There was a resonance between us. You fell unconscious. I had to defeat the Protector Man myself. My guardian charm was dispelled. The Life Eaters could tell the Protectors that the woman had escaped. There is someone here who can sense my guardian charm. Probably the schoolmaster. So had to dispel my guardian charm. Find different way to hide you and the woman from Life Eaters. Without guardian charm. Learn to protect myself without guardian charm. Scare off Life Eaters without guardian charm. Then devise new escape plan for you and the woman. And finally, cut hole in thick metal wall of prison. Even though I am only first year student. No time to explain. You must go now. If we never meet again, teacher, then I was glad to know you for a time, even though you are probably evil. It is good to have the chance to say this much. Goodbye.
And Harry took the broomstick and presented it to Bellatrix, saying simply,
Get on!
He had decided to keep the memories. For one thing, they were important. For another, he and the defense professor had started planning this a week ago, and Harry wasn't about to obliterate the whole last week or explain to Bellatrix exactly what needed to be obliviated. Harry could probably fool Veritaserum, and if Dumbledore insisted that Harry drop his occlumency shields for a deeper examination, well, Harry had acted heroically throughout.
Stop! Said the snake.
Its voice was stronger now.
Stop! 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 What do you mean, goodbye?
Escape plan is risky,
said Harry.
My life is not at stake, only yours and hers. So I am staying, turning myself in.
No,
said the snake. The hiss was forceful.
Must not, not permitted.
Bellatrix mounted the broomstick. Harry could sense, but never see, her head turning to look at him. She said no word, awaiting him, perhaps, or merely awaiting his orders.
No longer trust you,
Harry said simply.
Not since you tried to slay the Protector Man.
And the snake hissed.
I did not seek to slay the Protector Man. Ah, you fool boy. Slaying him would not make sense, evil or no.
The earth ceased to turn on its axis, paused in its orbit around the sun. The snake's hiss was now more furious than anything Harry had ever heard from the human Professor Quirrell.
slay him? Had I sought to slay him, he would have been dead within seconds, fool boy. He was no match for me. I sought to subdue, to dominate, force him to drop shields upon his mind, needed to read him, to know who awaited his reply, learn details for memory spell.
You cast killing curse.
Knew he would dodge.
Was his life worth so little? What if he didst not dodge?
Would have pushed him out of the way with own magic, fool boy.
Again the pause in the planet's spin. Harry hadn't thought of that.
Witless dunce of a plotter!
Hissed the snake, so angrily that their hisses seemed to overlap and slither over each other's tails.
Clever imbecile, cunning idiot, fool of an untrained Slytherin, your misplaced mistrust has ruined.
This is not a fair time to argue,
Harry observed mildly. The surge of relief trying to flood through him was cancelled by the increased tension.
Since I cannot get angry at you properly without opening myself to life-eaters, must rush. Someone may have heard noise.
Explain escape plan,
the snake said imperiously.
Swiftly.
Harry explained. Parseltongue didn't have words for the Muggle technology, but Harry described the function, and Professor Quirrell seemed to understand. There were a few short hisses, the snakish equivalent of a bark of surprised laughter, and then snapped commands.
Tell woman to look away. Cast spell of silence. Set guardian charm outside door. Will transform myself. Make few swift improvements to your invention. Give woman emergency potion so she can shield us. Transform back before you dispel charm. Plan will be safer then.
And am I to believe,
Harry hissed,
that healer for woman truly awaits us?
Use sense, boy. Suppose I am evil. To end use of you here is obviously not what I planned. Mission is target of opportunity, invented after saw your guardian charm. Whole affair meant to be unnoticed, hid when left eating place. Obviously, you will see person pretending to be healer on arrival. Go back to eating place afterward. Original plan carries on undisturbed.
Harry stared at the invisible snake. On the one hand, saying it like that made Harry feel rather dumb. And on the other hand, it wasn't exactly reassuring.
So,
Harry hissed,
what is your plan for me, precisely?
You said no time, came the snake's hiss. But plan is for you to rule country, obviously. Even your young noble friend has understood that by now. Ask him on return if you wish. We'll say no more now. Is time to fly, not speak.
The old wizard reached out toward another metal door, from behind which came an endless dead mutter.
I'm not serious. I'm not serious. I'm not serious.
The red golden phoenix on his shoulder was already screaming urgently, and the old wizard was already wincing when... Another cry pierced the corridor, phoenix-like, but not the true phoenix's call. The wizard's head turned, looked at the blazing silver creature on his other shoulder, even as the ephemeral and substanceless talons launched the spell entity into the air. The false phoenix flew down the corridor. The old wizard raced off after, legs churning like a spry young man of 60. The true phoenix screamed once, twice, and a third time, hovering before the metal door, and then, when it became clear that its master would not return for all its calling, flew reluctantly after. Professor Quirrell had assumed his true form, this time. Polyjuice only lasted for an hour without redosing, and though the defense professor was pale, leaning against the metal bars of the nearest cell, his magic was strong enough to seize his wand without a word, even as Bellatrix doffed the cloak and placed it obediently in Harry's waiting hand. The sense of doom was building once more, though not in full force, as the defense professor's power returned, the fringes of its vast force clashing with Harry's slight childish aura. Harry said aloud the description of his muggle device, naming it to the observing wizard, and then a finite from Harry turned all his hard work back into an ice cube. Professor Quirrell could not cast spells on something Harry had transfigured, for that would be interaction, however slight, between their magics. But 3 seconds after, Professor Quirrell was holding his own transfigured version of the muggle device. A single barked word and a sweep of his wand, and the residue of glue was gone from the magical item. 3 more incantations later, the magical and technological were fused together as though into a single thing, and charms of unbreakability and flawless function had been cast upon the muggle device. Harry felt a lot better about doing this under adult supervision. A potion was thrown to Bellatrix, and Professor Quirrell and Harry both commanded,
"Drink!"
as though speaking in the same voice. The emaciated woman had already been lifting it to her lips without waiting, for it was evident to anyone that this snake animagus was a servant of the Dark Lord and a powerful and trusted one. Harry finished pulling the hood of the cloak of invisibility over his head. A brief and terrible magic lashed out from the defense professor's wand, scouring the hole in the wall, scarring the huge chunk of metal that lay in the room's midst, as Harry had requested, saying that the method he'd used might identify him.
"Left-hand glove,"
Harry said to his pouch, and drew it forth and put it on. A gesture from the defense professor made a harness appear upon Bellatrix's shoulders, and another, smaller cloth device upon her hand, and something like handcuffs on her wrists, even as the woman finished drinking the potion. A strange, unhealthy colour seemed to come over Bellatrix's pale face. She straightened. Her sunken eyes seemed brighter and far more dangerous. Small wisps of steam were coming out of her ears. Harry decided not to think about that part. And Bellatrix Black laughed then, sudden, mad laughter that rang much too loudly amid the small prison cells of Azkaban. Very soon, the defense professor had said, Bellatrix would fall unconscious and stay that way for a while. The price of the potion she had taken, but for just a few moments she would regain perhaps a 20th part of the power she had once wielded. The defense professor threw his wand toward Bellatrix and an instant later blurred into a green snake. An instant after that, the Dementor's fear returned to the room. Bellatrix flinched only slightly, caught the wand and gestured without a word. The snake flew up and was inserted into the harness on her back. Harry said, "Up!" to the broomstick. Bellatrix attached the wand to the holster on her hand. Harry leaped onto the two-person broomstick in the lead position. Bellatrix followed behind him. She took the cuff-like devices on her wrists and chained her hands to the grips of the broomstick, even as Harry's right hand shoved his wand into his pouch. And the three shot forward through the hole in the wall, emerging into the open air directly above the Dementor's pit, in the vast interior of the vast triangular prism that was Azkaban, the blue sky now clearly visible above them, shining down its daylight. Harry angled the broomstick and began accelerating upward and toward the center of the triangular space. His left hand, gloved to prevent direct contact between his skin and something which Professor Quirrell had transfigured, held the switch of the control on the Muggle device. Far above them, distant shouts rang out.
"All right, you primitive screwheads!"
Aurors on fast-racing broomsticks angled out of the sky, diving straight down toward them, faint sparks of light already blazing downward as the first shots were fired.
"Listen up!
Protego Maximus!"
shouted Bellatrix in a mighty, cracked voice, followed by a cackling laugh as a shimmering blue field surrounded them.
"You see this?"
From the decaying pit in the center of Azkaban, over 100 Dementors rose into the air, appearing to some as a great mass of corpses, a flying graveyard, appearing to another as a conglomerate of absences that seemed to form one vast rip in the world as they slid upward.
"This!"
The voice of an ancient and powerful wizard bellowed a terrible incantation, and a great blast of white golden fire shot out of the hole in Azkaban's wall, shapeless for only a moment before it began to form wings.
"Is!"
And the auras activated the anti-anti-gravity jinx that had been built into the wards of Azkaban, dispelling all flying spells whose enchantment had not been cast within the recently changed passphrase. The lift on Harry's broom switched off. Gravity, on the other hand, stayed on. Their broom's upward rise slowed, started to decelerate, began the process of turning into a fall.
"My!"
But the enchantments that kept the broom pointed in a direction and allowed steering, the enchantments that kept the riders attached and somewhat protected them from acceleration, those enchantments were still functioning.
"Broomstick!"
Harry hit the ignition switch on the General Technics Maid, Model Berserker PFRC N-Class Ammonium Perchlorate Composite Propellant Solid Fuel Rocket that had been mated to his Nimbus X-200 two-person broomstick. And there was noise.
Hello. Thank you so much for listening so far. We have over 40 hours published already. We release a new chapter twice a week, on Tuesdays and on Fridays. Please do come join us on Discord, there's a link in the description of every episode, where we record this live on Monday evenings, 8 p.m. GMT. If you haven't left a review on Audible yet, Please do. They really help with the rankings and help more people listen to this incredible story.
Chapter 59. The Stanford Prison Experiment, Curiosity, Part 9. Broomsticks had been invented during what a muggle would have called the Dark Ages, supposedly by a legendary witch named Celestria Relevo, allegedly the great-great-granddaughter of Merlin. Celestria Relevo, or whichever person or group had really invented those enchantments, hadn't known a darned thing about Newtonian mechanics. Broomsticks, therefore, worked by Aristotelian physics. They went where you pointed them. If you wanted to move straight forward, you pointed them straight forward. You didn't worry about keeping some of the thrust going downward to cancel out the effect of gravity. If you turned a broomstick, all of its new velocity was in the new direction of pointing. It didn't go sideways based on its old momentum. Broomsticks had maximum speeds, not maximum accelerations. Not because of anything to do with air resistance, but because a broomstick had some maximum Aristotelian impetus its enchantments could exert. Harry had never explicitly noticed that before, despite being dexterous enough to get the best grades in flying class. Broomsticks worked so much like the human mind instinctively expected them to work, that his brain had managed to entirely overlook their physical absurdity. Harry, on his first Thursday of broomstick lessons, had been distracted by more interesting-seeming phenomena. Words written on paper, and a glowing red ball. So, his brain had simply suspended its disbelief, marked the reality of broomsticks as accepted, and proceeded to have its fun, without ever once thinking of the question, whose answer would have been obvious. For it is a sad fact that we only ever think about a tiny fraction of all the phenomenon we encounter. That is the story of how Harry James Potter Evans Verus was almost killed by his own lack of curiosity. Because rockets did not work by Aristotelian physics. Rockets did not work like a human mind instinctively thought a flying thing should work. A rocket-assisted broomstick, therefore, did not move like the magical broomsticks upon which Harry was such a very good flyer. None of this actually went through Harry's mind at the time. For one thing, the loudest noise he'd ever heard in his life was preventing him from hearing himself think. For another thing, accelerating upward at 4 gravities meant that he had around 2.5 seconds, total, to go from the bottom to the top of Azkaban. And even if they were 2.5 of the longest seconds in the history of time, that wasn't enough room to do much thinking. There was time only to see the lights of the Aura's curses arrowing down at him, slightly angle the broomstick to avoid them, realize that the broomstick was simply continuing on with mostly the same momentum instead of going in the direction he pointed it, and activate the wordless concepts
"grab"
and
"Newton."
Whereupon Harry angled the broomstick much harder, and then they started to very quickly approach the wall, so he angled it back the other way, and there were more lights coming down, and the Dementors were sliding smoothly up toward them, along with some kind of giant-winged creature of white golden flame. So Harry wrenched the broomstick back toward the sky, but now he was still sliding toward another wall, so he tilted the broomstick slightly, and he stopped approaching, but he was too close, so he tilted it again, and then the distant auras on their broomsticks weren't very distant at all, and he was going to crash into that woman, so he spun his broomstick straight away from her, and then in another instant he realized that his rocket was an extremely powerful flamethrower, and in a fraction of a second it would be pointing directly at the aura,
So he spun the broomstick sideways as he kept going up, and he couldn't remember if it was pointing at any auras now, but at least it wasn't pointing at her. Harry missed another aura by about a meter, zipping past him on a sideways pointed flamethrower, moving upward at, Harry would later guess, around 300 kilometers per hour. If there were any screams of roasted auras, he didn't hear them, but this was not evidence, one way or another, because all that Harry was hearing at the moment was an extremely loud noise. A couple of calmer, if not quieter, seconds later, there didn't seem to be any auras around, or any dementors, or any giant winged flamed creatures, and the vast and terrible edifice of Azkaban looked surprisingly tiny from this height. Harry got the broomstick pointed toward the sun, faintly visible through the clouds. It wasn't high in the sky at this time of day and month of winter, and the broomstick accelerated for another 2 seconds in that direction and picked up an amazing amount of speed very quickly before the solid fuel rocket burned itself out. After that, once Harry could hear himself think again, when there was only the howling wind from their ridiculous speed, and Harry's enchantment-assisted fingers gripping the broomstick were merely resisting the decelerating drag of moving way faster than terminal velocity, that was when Harry actually thought all that stuff about Newtonian mechanics and Aristotelian physics and broomsticks and rocketry and the importance of curiosity and how he was never going to do anything this Gryffindor ever again. Or at least not until after he learned the Dark Lord's secret of immortality, and why had he listened to Professor Quirinus?
"I assure you, boy, I would not attempt this if I did not anticipate my own survival,"
Quirrell, instead of Professor Michael.
"Son, if you try anything to do with rockets on your own, I mean anything whatsoever without a trained professional watching, you will die, and that'll make Mum sad."
Varys Evans.
"What?"
shrieked Amelia at the mirror. The wind had died down to a bearable level as the air resistance slowed them, giving Harry plenty of opportunity to listen to the buzzing, ringing sound that seemed to fill his whole brain. Professor Quirrell had been supposed to cast a quieting charm on the rocket exhaust. Apparently there were limits to what quieting charms could do. In retrospect, Harry should have transfigured a pair of earplugs, not just trusted to the quieting charm, though that probably wouldn't have been enough either. Well, magical healing probably had something to treat permanent hearing damage. No, really, magical healing probably had something to treat that. He'd seen students go to Madame Pomfrey with injuries that sounded a lot worse.
"Is there some way of transplanting an imaginary personality to someone else's head?"
asked Hufflepuff.
"I don't want to live in yours any more."
Harry shoved it all into the back of his mind. There really wasn't anything he could do about it right now. Was there anything he should be worrying about? Then Harry glanced behind him, remembering for the first time to check whether Bellatrix or Professor Quirrell had been blown off the broomstick. But the green snake was still in its harness, and the emaciated woman was still clinging to the broomstick, her face still charged with unhealthy colour, and her eyes still bright and dangerous. Her shoulders were shaking like she was laughing hysterically, and her lips were moving as though to shout, but no sound was coming out. Oh, right. Harry took off the hood of his cloak, tapped his ears to let her know he couldn't hear, whereupon Bellatrix grasped her wand, pointed it at Harry, and suddenly the ringing in his ears diminished. He could hear her. A moment later, he regretted it. The imprecation she was screaming at Azkaban, dementors, auras,
Dumbledore, Lucius, Bartimus Crouch, something called the Order of the Phoenix, and all who stood in the way of her Dark Lord, etc., were not suitable for young and more sensitive listeners, and her laughter was hurting his newly healed ears.
"Enough, Bella,"
Harry finally said, and her voice stopped on the instant. There was a pause. Harry pulled the cloak back over his head, just on general principles, and realized in the same instant that they might have telescopes down there or something. In retrospect, pulling down his hood for even a moment had been an incredibly dumb move. He hoped the whole mission didn't end up failing because of that one error.
"We're not really cut out for this, are we?"
observed Slytherin.
"Hey!"
Hufflepuff objected in sheer reflex.
"We can't expect to do anything perfectly the first time. We probably just need more practice." "Forget I said that!"
Harry looked back again, saw Bellatrix looking around with a puzzled, wondering look on her face. Her head kept turning. Turning. And finally, Bellatrix said, her voice now lower,
"My lord, where are we?"
"What do you mean?"
was what Harry wanted to say, but the Dark Lord would never admit to not understanding anything, so Harry replied dryly,
"We're on a broomstick." "Does she think she's dead? That this is heaven?"
Bellatrix's hands were still chained to the broomstick, so it was only a finger that came up and pointed when she said,
"What is that?"
Harry followed the direction of her finger and saw nothing in particular, actually. Then Harry realized, after they'd gone up high enough, there hadn't been any clouds to obscure it any more.
"That is the sun, dear Bella."
It came out remarkably controlled, the Dark Lord sounding perfectly calm and maybe a little impatient with her, even as the tears started down Harry's cheeks. In the endless cold, in the pitch blackness, the sun would surely have been a happy memory. Bellatrix's head kept turning.
"And the fluffy things?"
she said.
"Clouds?"
There was a pause, and then Bellatrix said,
"But what are they?"
Harry didn't answer her. There was no way his voice could have been steady, would have been steady. It was all he could do to keep his breathing perfectly regular while he cried. After a while, Bellatrix breathed so softly Harry almost didn't hear.
"Pretty."
Her face slowly relaxed, the colour leaving its paleness almost as quickly as it had arrived. Her skeletal body slumped down against the broomstick. The borrowed wand dangled lifelessly from the strap attached to her unmoving hand.
"You have got to be kidding!"
Harry's mind remembered then. The pepper up potion came at a cost. Bellatrix would
sleep for a considerable time,
Professor Quirrell had said. And in the same instant, another part of Harry became utterly convinced, looking back at the chalk-white, emaciated woman, seeming deader in the bright sunlight than anything Harry had ever seen alive, that she was dead, that she had just uttered her last word, that Professor Quirrell had misjudged the dosage, or deliberately sacrificed Bellatrix to guard their own escape.
"Is she breathing?"
Harry couldn't see if she was breathing. There was no way, on the broomstick, to reach back and take her pulse. Harry looked ahead to make sure they weren't about to run into any flying rocks, kept on steering the broomstick toward the sun, the invisible boy and the possibly dead woman riding off into the afternoon, while his fingers gripped the wood so hard they turned white. He couldn't reach back and perform artificial respiration. He couldn't use anything from his healer's kit.
"Trust Professor Quirrell to have not endangered her."
Strange. It was strange that even genuinely believing that Professor Quirrell hadn't meant to kill the Aura, for it would have been stupid, thinking of the defense professor's reassurances no longer felt reassuring. Then it occurred to Harry that he had yet to check. Harry looked back and hissed,
"Teacher!"
The snake did not stir within its harness and said no word. Maybe the snake, not being an actual rider, hadn't been protected from the acceleration. Or maybe coming that close to the Dementors without a shield, even for a moment in Animagus form, had knocked out the defense professor. That wasn't good. It was to have been Professor Quirrell who told Harry when it was safe to use the portkey. Harry steered the broomstick with whitened fingers and thought. He thought very hard for a small, unmeasured length of time, during which Bellatrix might or might not have been breathing, during which Professor Quirrell himself might have already been not breathing for a while. And Harry decided that while it was possible to recover from the error of wasting the portkey in his possession, it was not possible to recover from the error of letting a brain go too long without oxygen. So Harry took the next portkey in the sequence from his pouch, as he slowed his broomstick to a halt in the bright blue air. Harry didn't know, when he thought about it, whether a portkey's ability to adjust for the Earth's rotation also included the ability to match velocity in general with its new surroundings. Touched the portkey to the broomstick, and Harry paused, still holding the twig. The mate of the twig he had snapped what seemed like 2 weeks ago. He was feeling a sudden reluctance. His brain seemed to have learned the rule, by some purely neural process of operant conditioning, that snapping twigs is a bad idea. But that wasn't actually logical, so Harry snapped the twig anyway. There was a thunderous boom from behind the nearby metal door, causing Amelia to drop the mirror she was holding and spin around with her wand in hand, and then that door burst open to reveal Albus Dumbledore, standing there in front of a great smoking hole in the prison wall.
"Amelia!" said the old wizard. There was no trace of any of his customary levity. His eyes were hard as sapphires beneath his half-moon glasses. "I must leave Azkaban, and I must do so now. Is there any faster way than a broomstick to get beyond the wards?"
"No."
"Then I require your fastest broomstick at once."
The place where Amelia wanted to be was with the Aura, who had been injured by that fiend fire, or whatever it had been. What she needed to do was find out what Dumbledore knew.
"You!"
the old witch barked at the team around her.
"Keep clearing the corridors until you're at the bottom. They may not all have escaped yet."
And then, to the old wizard,
"Two broomsticks! You can brief me once we're in the air."
There was a match of stairs, but not a long one. A sickeningly hard yank caught at Harry's abdomen, considerably harder than the yank that had transported him to Azkaban, and this time the distance traversed was great enough that he could hear an instant of silence, watch the unseeable space between spaces, in the crack between one place and another. The sun, which had shone on the two only briefly, was swiftly occluded by a rain cloud as they shot away from Azkaban, in the direction of the wind and faster than the wind.
"Who's behind it?"
shouted Amelia to the broomstick, flying a pace away from her.
"One of two people," Dumbledore said back. "I know not at this instant who. If the first, then we are in trouble. If the second, we are all in far greater trouble."
Amelia didn't spare any breaths for sighs.
"When will you know?"
The old wizard's voice was grim, quiet and yet somehow rising above the wind.
"Three things they need for perfection, if it is that one. The flesh of the Dark Lord's most faithful servant, the blood of the Dark Lord's greatest foe, and access to a certain grave. I had thought Harry Potter safe, with their attempt on Azkaban all but failed, though I still set guards upon him. But now I am fearful indeed. They have access to time. Someone with a time-turner is sending messages for them, and I suspect the kidnapped attempt on Harry Potter has already taken place some hours ago, which is why we have not heard about it, being in Azkaban where time cannot knot itself. But past came after our own future, you see."
"And if it is the other?"
shouted Amelia. What she had heard already was worrying enough. That sounded like the darkest of dark rituals and centering on the dead Dark Lord himself. The old wizard, his face now even grimmer, said nothing, only shook his head. When the portkey's yank had subsided, the sun was only just peeking over the horizon, looking more like dawn than sunset, as their broom hovered low above a brief expanse of dark orange rock and sand, arranged into lumpy hills, like someone had kneaded the land's dough a few times and then forgotten to roll it flat. In the near distance, waves rolled past in an endless vista of water, though the ground over which the broomstick hovered was above sea level by meters at the least. Harry blinked at the dawn colours, and then realised the portkey had been international.
"Oi!"
came a brisk female shout from behind him, and Harry spun the broomstick to look. A middle-aged lady was holding up one hand to her mouth in a deliberate calling gesture, and bustling forward. Her kindly features, narrow eyes, and umber skin marked a race unfamiliar to Harry. She was clad in brilliant purple robes of a style Harry had never seen before, and when her lips opened again, she spoke with an accent that Harry couldn't place, for he was not widely travelled.
"Where are you? You're 2 hours late. I almost gave up on the lot of you. Hello?"
There was a brief pause. Harry's thoughts seemed to be moving oddly. Too slow. Everything felt distant, like there was a thick pane of glass between himself and the world, and another thick pane of glass between himself and his feelings, so that he could see, but not touch. It had come over him upon seeing the dawn's light and the kindly witch, and thinking that it all seemed like a proper end to the adventure. Then the witch was rushing forward and drawing her wand. A muttered word severed the cuffs that bound the emaciated woman to the broomstick, and Bellatrix was being floated down onto the sandy rock with her skeletal arms and pale legs dangling like lifeless things.
"Oh, Merlin!" whispered the witch. "Merlin! Merlin! Merlin!"
"She appears concerned,"
thought an abstract, a distant thing between two panes of glass.
"Is that what a real healer would say?
Or is it what someone told to put on a performance would say?
As though it wasn't Harry who spoke, but some other part of himself behind yet another pane of glass, a whisper came from his lips.
The green snake on her back is an animagus.
Not high, the whisper. Not cold. Only quiet.
He's unconscious.
The witch's head twitched up to look at where that voice had seemed to speak out of empty air, and then looked back down at Bellatrix.
You're not Mr. Jaffe.
That would be the animagus,
whispered Harry's lips.
Oh,
thought the Harry behind glass, listening to the sound of his own lips.
That makes sense. Professor Quirrell must have used a different name.
Since when is he a... Bah! Forget it!
The witch laid her wand on the snake's nose for a moment, then shook her head sharply.
Nothing wrong with him that a day's rest won't cure. Huh?
Can you wake him up now?
Whispered Harry's lips.
Is that a good idea?
Thought Harry, but his lips definitely seemed to think so. Again, the sharp headshake.
If an innovate didn't work on him,
began the witch.
I didn't attempt one,
whispered Harry's lips.
What? Why? Oh, never mind. Innovate.
There was a pause, and then a snake slowly crawled out of its harness. Slowly, the green head came up, looked around. A blur later, Professor Quirrell was standing, and a moment later, had sagged to his knees.
Lie down,
said the witch without looking up from Bellatrix.
That you in there, Jeremy?
Yes,
said the defence professor rather hoarsely as he carefully laid himself down on a relatively flat patch of sandy orange rock. He was not so pale as Bellatrix, but his face was bloodless in the dim dawn light.
Salutations, Miss Campbell-Bunker.
I told you,
said the witch, sharpness in her voice and a slight smile on her face.
Call me Crystal. This isn't Britain, and we'll have none of your formality here. And it's Doctor now, not Miss.
My apologies, Doctor Campbell-Bunker.
This was followed by a dry chuckle. The witch's smile grew a little wider, her voice that much sharper.
Who's your friend?
You don't need to know.
The defence professor's eyes were closed where he lay on the ground.
How wrong did it go?
Very dryly indeed.
You can read about it tomorrow in any newspaper with an international section.
The witch's wand was tapping here, there, poking and prodding all over Bellatrix's body.
Oh, missed you, Jeremy.
Truly?
Said the defence professor, sounding slightly surprised.
Not even a tiny little bit. If I didn't owe you...
The defence professor started to laugh, and then it turned into more of a coughing fit.
What do you think?
Said Slytherin to the inner critic, while Harry listened from behind the glass walls.
Performance or reality? Can't tell,
said Harry's inner critic.
I'm not in top critical form right now. Can anyone think of a good probe to gather more information?
Said Ravenclaw. Again, that whisper from the empty air above the broomstick.
What's the chance of undoing all that was done to her?
Oh, let's see. Legitimacy and unknown dark rituals. 10 years for that to set in place, followed by 10 years of dementia exposure. Undo that? You're out of your skull, Mr. Whoever you are. The question is whether there's anything left, and I'd call that maybe one chance in three."
The witch suddenly cut herself off. Her voice, when it spoke again, was quieter.
"If you were her friend before, then no. You're never getting her back. Best understand that now." "I'm voting that this is a performance," said the inner critic. "She wouldn't just blurt all that out in response to one question unless she was looking for an opportunity." "Noted. But I'm putting a low weight of confidence on that," said Ravenclaw. "It's very hard not to let your suspicions control your perceptions when you're trying to weigh evidence that subtle." "What potion did you give her?"
the witch said after opening Bellatrix's mouth and peering inside, her wand flashing multiple colours of illumination. The man lying on the ground calmly said,
"Pepper her up."
"Were you out of your mind?"
Again the coughing laugh.
"She'll sleep for a week if she's lucky,"
the witch said and clucked her tongue.
"I'll allow you when she opens her eyes, I suppose, so you can come back and talk her into that unbreakable vow. Have you got anything to stop her from killing me on the spot, if she manages to even move for another month?"
The defense professor, eyes still closed, took a sheet of paper from his robes. A moment later, words began to appear on it, accompanied by tiny wisps of smoke. When the smoke had stopped rising, the paper floated over toward the woman. The woman looked over the paper with raised eyebrows, gave a sardonic snort,